Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 22nd, 2005. Today's session is entitled Worship at Holden, presented by Emily Meyer. Disc number MEM-2005-02.
Loving God, you call us in to worship you through our daily tasks and through our gathered assemblies of praise and thanksgiving. And we give you thanks for those opportunities. Bless our conversation tonight with your Spirit, that we might be inspired and leave from this conversation refreshed and prepared to join in your among your people to worship you in new ways. In the name of Christ we pray.
Amen.
So this is the first time I've done this, so I have no idea how it's gonna go. So it's really, the idea is to kind of leave it up to those who choose to come here and discuss, to kind of guide the conversation, and I'm available to offer answers to questions, to offer resource possibilities for those who are interested in that, to maybe explain something that you didn't understand, or to hear from you creative ideas that you think might work well here, or resources that you have, or any of those kinds of things. So this is really just kind of what would we like to talk about, and I'll maybe just leave a moment of silence, and then if nobody talks, I'll just try to guess where we want to go. Okay, so I'll just kind of leave it open to you if you have something on your mind.
I've got a full set in there.
Throw it out there.
I'm always curious of where you get what you do, you know, the Mountain Vespers, the Creation Vespers, and so on. You have sources that you have available that you share with us.
Yeah. Mountain Vespers was written, I believe, here in the village, in the valley, by Kent Gustafson, whose name is on it.
Gotcha.
So this is totally his creation, and he has come back a few times since then, and it's just become a favorite of people, so it's really copyrighted here at, this one is copyrighted here at Holden, written by Kent Gustafson, who was in the long-term community. Back, I'm going to guess, around 2001, 2002, since that's when it was copyrighted. So that one is...
So you have sometimes ready-made that you pick up and have...
Yeah, that one is a Kent Gustafson original that was written here in the Valley, read exactly along the same lines as Marty Haugen's Holden Evening Prayer, Vespers 86, whatever you want to call it, same exact idea. And now this spring, he's currently one of the food service coordinators, and moving into next year, he will be starting as the village musician, Paul Friesenkarper. He'll be playing bass tonight. That's how you can pick out who he is. He has written another Vespers along these lines, along the lines of Vespers 86. And so this summer, we will be using Mountain Vespers, and Paul's newly written one called Light of Love, and Vespers 86 intermittently. So we'll do 86, 1 week we'll do this, then we'll do 86 again, then we'll do Paul's, then we'll do 86 again, and then we'll do this. Because we do keep getting new resources, and it's kind of fun to share them with people.
Yeah.
And have people, we know some people come and they really want to have Marty Haugen's Vespers 86. At the same time, you know, Paul Friesenkarper is a great new liturgist, and he's got this, it's a really fun, well-written, easily singable Vespers, so it's kind of nice to share that sometimes. So
I truly enjoy being introduced to ones I'm not familiar with, so keep it going.
Thanks! All right. Another place, on Monday night, we did this solstice kind of thing, and we're doing creational Vespers because our theme this summer is Take Off Your Shoes, You're Standing on Holy Ground, and Ben Stewart, who was pastor here before me, has been doing a lot of work with liturgy and ecology, and led a liturgy conference here last fall on liturgy and ecology, reminding us that we live in this phenomenal part of creation, and we worship inside all the time. So this summer we thought, why do we do that? Why don't we go outside? So we're going to go outside once a week to stand on the holy ground and take a look at it and enter into worship with it. And we happen to find this thing that actually has a picture, sort of vaguely reminiscent of a burning bush on the cover, written by Norman Hobble, or edited by Norman Hobble, much of it is also written by Norman Hubbell, who has also been a teacher here at Holden back a few years ago. And it's full, it's seven songs of creation. It's seven different liturgies, several different songs, some of which take old tunes and put new words to it, some of which are new tunes recently written. And we're taking a lot of stuff out of here for that Monday night creational kind of oriented Vespers, outside Vespers. So those are...
Emily, too. Everything but Paul's liturgy is available in the bookstore, right?
This is definitely available in the bookstore. Mountain Vespers, I believe, is available.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you buy the CD, and if you get the... One version has the music encrypted on it.
Okay. And 86 is absolutely available in the bookstore. So all of them are down there for
your perusal. Mm-hmm. I have... We just got in last night, so we haven't been exposed to...
You have no idea what we're talking about.
Well, vaguely I recognize some of this music.
Uh-huh.
Is it because you're going to breed familiarity by using one liturgy 1 week and then going to another one, as opposed to exposing some of us to a different one each evening?
I don't think she does. I think Emily is talking about that alternation on
Saturday.
So each day has its own
theme.
Focus or theme. Last night, Monday night was creation. Tonight is the theme Vespers. Friday night is prayer on the cross. Thursday is a more conventional Vespers, the office.
Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, right. And that one rotates three services. So since,
I was getting the idea that
not one, every 4 days for the whole week. No.
No. Thank you.
Good night. No, so each day, you'll see it on the bulletin board in the dining room. There's each day of the week is different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we're rotating, for Monday nights, we're rotating different themes from here through the whole summer. Saturday nights, we're doing these three different song Vespers. Wednesday night, we have a consistent liturgy.
Okay.
Sometimes we throw the order around a little bit, but it's all right here. So there's the gathering litany, then somewhere in there we're going to do a song. There's the reading, which will stay the same all summer because it's our summer theme text. And then different people are bringing us a preached word. Tonight it's going to be Anne. It's all teaching staff throughout the summer who will be preaching on Wednesday nights. And then there are prayers, and there's another song. And one of the songs is the theme song written by our village musician.
With the dance.
And a dance.
Amazing dance.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
And then a closing prayer. So this is kind of a set liturgy that will be every week on Wednesday. Even if we kind of fuddle with the order of it, it's basically the same. But a different preacher each week to give us a new glimpse into the word.
Okay. Emily, maybe would you reflect on the interaction of the familiar and the unfamiliar as that works out over a week or over a summer or over a year?
Yes.
Because that's very different for you here, I think, than when you were serving in a parish,
mm-hmm.
and then consequently for most people's experience.
Mm-hmm. One thing here, if we do too much that's too familiar, it gets real rote and kind of boring, frankly, because so many of us who live here, those of us who live here, if we were to do that every day, that would just get, kind of die in a sense. And so to keep a sense of liveliness and interaction in the worship times, we need to be anchored in tradition, but we're always kind of questioning what is that tradition and what part of that tradition are we anchoring in. And that sort of fluctuates from year to year and from month to month sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So our Sunday liturgies, there is an element of confession and forgiveness at the beginning. It looks a lot different than what a stereotypical LBW confessional piece looks like. But it is intended to be a confessional piece with a Kyrie. So we're kind of, the tradition, we're following the forms on the Sunday, as one example. We're following the forms of a traditional Lutheran service, but definitely with some different multicultural. We're definitely trying to expand our cultural awareness through music. That's a fantastic way to do it. Also, expansive language is a big thing here, and for me personally, but using language that incorporates as many biblical images for God as, not all, you know, we're not trying to cram them all into one Sunday, but but being aware of the whole biblical witness about God and incorporating images as they apply. And so being true to the form is one way that we hold on to tradition. Also, just musically, there are always going to be traditional hymns, Lutheran and otherwise, that are very familiar to people. And we don't intentionally, we're very careful to not just throw only new stuff. There's got to be something kind of familiar to people in there. Of course, what's familiar to who is a big question. I may have grown up singing the song every Sunday, and somebody in another state has never heard of it before. So there's also that. There is a certain form to our Vespers, and so that, again, on Saturday night, the song Vespers kind of follow that form, and the Mountain Vespers is bluegrass. That's just the style. Paul's is more of a folky, jazzy kind of feel to it, and then Vespers 86 has a whole different kind of feel. So the form is there, the style is different. Am I kind of getting at what you're talking about? And then other nights, you know, it's just kind of what anything goes, and we have these parameters of saying, you know, it's worship, so we need to have the word in there somewhere, and we'll be praying to God in some way, and the congregation should participate in some way so that it's not just one person standing up there doing their thing, but we are gathered here all to worship together, so there, that would generally connote some kind of singing, some kind of a litany, something where the congregation is participating. But that form is fairly flexible as well. So there are also, though, for folks who come in here and there's a lot of new stuff, Saturday night we keep that form pretty straight on. Sunday morning we have a sung matins that is very traditional out of a gather hymnal. It may not, it's just a set liturgy that is familiar to several people. Tuesday evenings we do a compline, which is just very, very little revisions out of the LBW, so that's a fairly familiar thing, very traditional. And Thursday nights we're working on a new kind of compline that's a foot washing, so that'll feel very traditional and have definite kind of standard liturgical elements to it. So there are additional services throughout the week that are maybe the more traditional, and then other elements come in on different nights. So.
So you don't have a Sunday Eucharist?
We do.
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Every Sunday. Every Sunday we celebrate Holy Communion. And we just almost never...
You're just doing matins.
Oh, I'm sorry, right.
In the morning.
That's the kind of traditional thing. Sunday we always have communion every evening. And that service we've had, I don't know that we've ever done LBW here, or with one voice for that. Maybe once or twice we've tried that. But this, one of my joys in coming here was to work on writing liturgy. And I happened to be able to work for 2 years with a musician who's really good at not only writing music, but also collecting music from different sources. And so these four here, the music is all from a variety of different sources. None of it, I don't think we've written any new music for this. But we looked at the form a little bit and kind of combined some elements and putting them together so that we could have this gathering time that's a little bit different than the traditional. But it's...
These are Eucharistic settings?
These four, yeah. One, okay. Two, three, four are Eucharistic settings. This winter we wrote, Scott and I wrote an Advent liturgy together, so that was brand new, out of our own, well, not of our own brains, hopefully, out of the Spirit's work. And then this Lent, we have another one that I wrote. So, again, trying to be true to the forms, and definitely using scripture as the base for the words that are coming out of it, or being put into it. But kind of looking at how we do, for a lot of people here, not a lot of people, but many people who come here have been have felt marginalized on the fringes of Christianity. And one consistent thing that I have heard is how we do confession. And that's a real difficult, not that people don't want to confess, but certain words in our traditional way of confessing have been a challenge to people and have been a stumbling block. And so in conversation with several people around that, looking at how we do confession so that we're still confessing and we're still receiving absolution, but it's got a little different feel to it, a little different. And we've tried several different forms of that that I think have been better, you know, some are better and some are not as not as good. When you play around with things, you don't always succeed. So.
Is there anything in the liturgy that has to be in there to make it liturgically correct?
Well,
depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, it totally depends upon who you talk to. In the Augsburg Confession, Martin Luther says, as long as the word is preached and the sacraments are presented, that's worship. There are some who think that, you know, nothing is really necessary. You can just kind of throw whatever you want in there, and that's fine. And then there are others who, if you don't follow the form, we often don't do an Apostles' Creed or a Nicene Creed in our liturgy, which is standard format for most worshiping communities. But again, we're dealing with a lot of people here who come in and out all the time, for whom that creed is either a stumbling block or worse, just like, I don't get what half of that means, and now you're making me say it. And so a creed is a thing that's been another issue here, that we definitely want to hope that we're all believing compatible things. But to put a creedal statement in people's mouths has been a challenging thing. And I think for some people, not having the creed in worship is, you know, not good.
Well, but confession, I mean, that's not necessary in,
nope,
in worship services.
No, well, again, depending upon who you talk to. For some people, it's very necessary because then they feel that they are prepared to receive communion. For other people, what does that mean? I don't know why I would need to do that. So it's the interesting thing about worshiping in this place, because we are so traditional, and so we have so many people coming out of a strong tradition, and yet a lot of different strong traditions, a lot of different strong Lutheran traditions. And at the same time, we have a number of people who are coming out of just kind of complete lack of awareness about church, or they've been wounded by church, or something like that. So we're trying to put the two together in a worship, and it depends upon which day you ask the question sometimes, and who's around, and it'll be a different answer on both of those, you know, all of that. What is necessary and what's important to people. That's kind of what keeps things interesting. You folks came in on an interesting week because it's board week, so the board and the village are kind of taking care of, well, not taking care of, that's not what I mean, taking advantage of the fact that the board's here, so we're doing a lot of kind of different things. Mm-hmm. We have the blessing of Shelley too, and it's not done, but we're going to bless it now because the board's here and the architect could be here, and Brian, who's been working on it for 2 years, is leaving, and, you know, so we'll bless it now. And so we're going to, tomorrow night will be a blessing for the new directors coming in, but they're not really coming until September. But the board's here, and I'm going to do it now. So it's kind of a weird week that way. But and last night we blessed the two outgoing directors, but they're not leaving, so until September. So it's just kind of a funky board week sort of thing going on.
It strikes me as being just perhaps a more vivid articulation of the whole of Christian life, though,
mm-hmm.
that we do things that aren't done.
Yeah.
We anticipate things that aren't yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing we haven't talked about very much is Prayer on the Cross, which is our Friday night piece, and that is again, depending upon what you consider traditional, that's fairly traditional. It's I think we got the idea originally from Tizé, mm-hmm. Or something along those lines. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
I couldn't.
And so if you're familiar at all with Tizé worship, it's very dark, candlelight, real simple chants that... some people, it's sort of interesting to have people who've never done this before, or maybe have, and so they have an expectation. But we don't use nobody in the pews has a resource in their hand. There are no pieces of paper, no books of any kind. And some people say, you know, you could pass out all the songs that we're going to see, but it's pitch black, so you can't see them. And that's kind of the idea, is to just be enveloped in the darkness and pray. We have a large cross on the floor, and then, well, usually it kind of changes depending, but generally speaking, there's a large cross on the floor, and we have candle boxes all the way around. And so the texts change, and the chants change each week, but the form is really pretty standard, that we kind of are invited in through scripture and some kind of guided imagery into prayer, sort of a focus for the night, and then just quiet time with chanting. To kind of hold those who are praying around the cross, and that stays pretty much the same each week with just different texts.
But that form would not be a typically Lutheran one.
Not necessarily, no.
I think for a lot of Lutherans, that's different. They actually do a prayer service and have people come up and lay on hands and all. That's pushing it for at least for many Lutherans. Mm-hmm. I think it's good, but
I think a lot of campus ministries are using it. That's
yeah, maybe more in campus ministry.
Right.
And youth ministry
or during
too.
Lent or Advent.
Yeah.
Youth ministries too have found that's a really
sure
that young people really mm-hmm. enjoy or appreciate that kind of service. So.
Yeah, the two services that are kind of requested for May Youth Weekends are prayer on the cross, and is it holding evening prayer, or do we just do that?
We
anyway?
Just do that because.
Oh, no,
it's
I guess we usually
it's
do a Eucharist.
Yeah. And we purposely do prayer on the cross on Friday to tie it to Good Friday, so that it is really a part of that kind of a mini triduum every weekend, so that we have a Good Friday and then a not really a vigil, but sort of a sung celebratory thing on Saturday night, and then communion on Sunday. Bring us a mini Easter each Sunday. Something you said about movement in worship for Lutherans in general is a little unfamiliar.
Right.
Well, up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that is.
Yeah.
We'll
do that very
like
well.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely moving. Lots of moving.
What's that?
I think there are some people who come to Lutheran worship and think it's extremely aerobic.
Yeah,
you know, because they're used to a tradition where you just sit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the things that many people find. When you move out of your childhood home and you find out the different ways people have meals and the different things people eat, it's sort of shocking because meals are so intimate and so necessary. That you just assume whatever my family does must be the way people eat. And I think worship practice is very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
That whatever is familiar to us as children,
mm-hmm.
if there is something familiar, then we assume that that's the natural way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
The other way I think is that there's a similarity with meals is as you're describing the interaction of tradition and innovation. There's a way we do that with meals. You know, you get your food pyramid, you know, and you're supposed to have these things in a meal. But then there's room to play with that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that similarity as well. I think, but what often strikes me as different is that we all know why we eat, at least at the most basic level, that we eat because if we don't, we die.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't always so sure about why we worship. And consequently, our responses can be all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think I was pretty old before I began to understand that when I come to worship, sometimes many times I've come because I'm commanded to do so, that it's my work to come to pray, to offer thanksgiving to God, and that I might not enjoy it. You know, that it might not be for me. You know, and there are certain forms of worship that, you know, the style doesn't do anything for me. But that's salutary for me to be reminded that worship isn't always about what I get out of it, but more what I put into it.
That's one of the joys and challenges, I think, of here. The people who live here covenant to worship every day. So we're in worship sometimes whether we want to be there or not. But that is one of the joys also, is that on the night when you really don't want to be there, suddenly it is for you. But it's also kind of encourages that grace around, tonight was not for me, and I'm going to assume that it was for someone else. And somebody else did get what they needed tonight. And that's a thing, I think, that worshiping daily, there's an advantage then in worshiping daily over worshiping just once a week. That we get to explore a variety of different styles, different images for God, different approaches to God. God comes to us in a variety of different ways. And in all that variety, there is somewhere in there when my soul will be fed. Worshiping once a week for 1 hour, you know, wow, that's really hard to make sure that we've got as much different stuff in there. And you just can't do that. So then you have to wait till the next week instead of till tomorrow. And I think that that's a different thing. And what we bring to it, I think, is also, I've had several times where people come to me afterwards telling me things that were wrong about worship, and as soon as I really start listening, I realize, you know what, we didn't even actually do that, or we didn't actually say that, and we didn't omit that. You just had on these things. Sometimes we are wrong, and something was wrong. That happens. But I've had it several times where people have come in with some kind of baggage or some kind of an assumption, and then I don't know if we could have done anything right, really. So it's an interesting.
That's what we bring to it. Thinking another way that I think we're very traditional is following the church year.
Oh yeah.
That we really pay attention to that, and I think for me that's also. I mean, there's certain seasons that speak more to me than others, and there's certain seasons where it's a discipline. And I think especially worshiping every day, that's helpful.
This winter we as a community we decided to worship in the mornings once a week on Wednesdays, and there were a number of people in the village who kind of took on Wednesday mornings as the days they wanted to prepare worship. And it was a challenge for a lot of, first of all, being here at 8 o'clock in the morning was a challenge for several people.
Was that in lieu of Sunday?
No. That's in lieu of worshiping at 6:30 at night.
Oh.
We're going to worship at 8 o'clock in the morning. And and then what their goal was, is it's not out now. If you were here on Monday night, I had this church year thing with the labyrinth over the top of it. And their goal was to have us worshiping on Wednesday mornings through the winter, kind of following the church year and the season as it was unfolding outside. So sometimes we were outside in the middle of winter at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was like windy and snow was flying everywhere. We're freezing, we're trying to sing, and you know. But their point was to enter into that cold, and it's dark out, and so it was very soft, it was very quiet worship, and a lot of people were saying, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, we got to get up and move, sitting here like this is not helping me get into my day. But the idea was to go, it's winter, let's sit in winter on Wednesday mornings and see what that actually feels like. And winter is quiet, and it's buried, and it's dark, and so that was one of those challenges. I'm not saying it was a challenge for you, but that was one of those places that it was a challenge, kind of a challenging thing. But then as we kind of got into it, people started realizing that's what we were doing, and it ended up being a real kind of meditative place collectively for people on Wednesday mornings. Not everybody got there, but, you know, some of us did, and it was kind of nice. So.
I'd be interested in hearing from Ben, in retrospect, anything you learned about the worship flow, kind of having been here and then left.
One of my favorite things that I learned here, I think, was the my memory of pyramids, especially as I picture my little internship site in East Tennessee, with there are these faded, musty-smelling, kind of like, or the green ones, you know, with kind of gold woven in there, which is
old-fashioned.
Yeah, 50s with unintelligible Latin inscriptions, or just kind of, well, weird. This is really weird. Why is it still here? And at Holden, going through the liturgical year with the green growing season in summer, and then going into that little mini season of November with All Saints and All Hallows and these kind of all these things about death and kind of the end of time as the leaves are falling off the trees and it's starting to get cold. And then Advent, you know, this is like the experience for Advent here, because you've got 45 minutes of direct sunlight.
Yep.
That's where the winter solstice is. And so you are looking for the light of the world.
It's blue outside.
Yeah, it is. And so that year, all those readings, that old fuddy-duddy lectionary and those banners are a memory of a time when we lived not by digital clocks and PDAs, but by the seasons, and that God's story told next to that makes creation blessed, but then also has a saving word beside the avalanche that destroys and the tsunami that overwhelms. So yeah, that's enough.
That, but you made me think of Kristen's art as well in that. Her, when you're talking about the pyramids, I mean, what a blessing to have somebody who's actually an artist who lives here, who makes new stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we have some of the tradition, we've got the gigantic, you know, we have this treasure from way back, I don't know, 30 years ago or something. So we have some of those pieces, but that's not all we have. We have this vital artist who lives in the community, and she really brings the community into making the art that's going to hang in our worship spaces. And she's into this silk stuff now, which is so cool. And she's really good. If there were two pieces that I wish people could bring back from here, is the great beauty of having a good artist do stuff for your space and not being afraid to do stuff with your space. And having well-trained, educated musicians who help form worship, because, you know, God knows we need more good musicians in our churches. But having her stuff, and then the conversations that come up around that art. Last year, she did three banners for our summer theme, and one was really controversial. It was an expression of response to the Abu Ghraib stuff that was coming out right when she was starting to work on summer theme art. And the summer theme was Summon Out What We Shall Be, and she said, here's the worst of us. We go to war with each other, we imprison one another, we treat each other horribly, and our theme is to summon out what we shall be, and to do that we have to look at this really stark reality of who we are, or who we tend to be. And so she had this big, huge banner in our worship space all summer based on Guernica. Picasso, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Guernica, really edgy, literally sharp edges and angular, kind of harsh to look at, and stark colors, basically black and white with just red, just little pieces of bright red in there. And the conversations that come up around that art are just powerful, good stuff. So visual art, movement, visual art, obviously good preaching of the word and doing the sacraments intentionally. I think that's kind of the hallmarks of what we try to do here, we don't always succeed. I've had several, like, walk home at night and just stick my head up to my husband and say, oops, you know, have to get a little pat on the head that I'm still okay. And that it comes out of the community. The worst worship services are the ones where I just try to throw something together all by myself, and then I go home and I say, oops. But when art comes out of the community, you get that, you know? That's real good stuff. So that was a summer theme art that she did early on in her time here. And so it's good.
The downside of being at Holden, though, is that you experience wonderful art and movement and everybody sings and music. And you go back to Faith Lutheran in Leavenworth with all 60 of us who were lucky to find a piano player. And yeah, I mean, it's just...
But you know, yeah. But it makes me think... It reminds me... Worship is what it is here because of the gifts that are present in the community. Mm-hmm. And the same could be said for, you know, Bethlehem Church in Colorado, in Longmont, Colorado. The gifts are there in the community, but I've done a piss poor job of finding them. You know, and so that's one of my challenges when I get back home is to be able to do that and get to be reminded of that while I'm here.
Well, I also wonder how much is familiarity, because I mean, having this conversation is making me appreciate worship here more, because I think I get complacent because it's my regular place of worship. And Mary, the three times I've worshipped at Faith, it's been an incredible gift. It's like, wow, here's a congregation that gives me hope for the ELCA. And believe me, I can be as hopeless as just about anyone. So,
but an example, I mean, the gifts, you know, we have gifts in our congregation. Like, the summer theater in Leavenworth is one of the most fantastic things around.
Well, and I really don't know anything about Faith, so I wasn't trying to...
Well, no, but I mean, I'm just saying, we have four or five of the soloists from the three summer theaters belong to our church. Mm-hmm. Do you think they'll ever come and sing or be in a choir or anything? They're too busy with... You know, with summer theater and stuff, and it hurts because I think we could do something. And Rich Kemmerer painted the whole inside of the church. It's incredible. Not many churches can say that, but still, you come up here and you go, why can't we have six wonderful musicians and?
Because nobody signs a covenant saying
they'll come. There you go. Yeah, your whole community hasn't agreed to worship every Sunday.
Oh no, once a month.
And they don't ever say the work of Leavenworth today is the Easter Vigil.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think there's another piece of what Mary said that's very important in being on a college campus. I'm very aware of it. Is the number of students who spend 4 years at St. Olaf. Come somewhat regularly or not at all to daily chapel, come on Sundays, and then have a standard of what constitutes worship, you know, and they want to hear Bruce Benson preach. Well, I want to hear Bruce Benson preach, quite frankly, if I can figure out any reason that I have to be at St. Olaf. I am a very happy woman, you know, because I want to hear Bruce Benson preach, but not always, you know, and you get to hear this great choir, but that's there, right? And it's for us to learn that worship is both something that unites us across time and space, and it's incredibly local. And how we work with that, I think every congregation has that challenge unless you pay for the musicians and that, you know, people with lots of money can say, well, we make this performance, but then it's not local anymore. And I don't know the answer to it. I just think you've articulated the challenge, which is a huge one.
There's also the tension between, and I did youth ministry before I came here, and there's this tension between, this isn't directly in response, so I'm not, this isn't really a kind of a thing. But there's this tension between doing it really, really well with the paid professionals, etc., or using the gifts that are present and saying, those gifts are really good and they're plenty good enough. And I think one way, I know in youth ministry, I ran into this a lot, the way we didn't do that well is saying, you're 16 years old and you can play the organ like nobody's business, mm-hmm. you're playing the organ,
yeah.
mm-hmm. instead of so-and-so, or we're going to figure out a way to flip you with the woman who's been here for, you know, five generations. And my grandma is one of those women, so I feel like I can say that without disparaging every lovely woman who's playing the organ right now. Because those are certainly gifts that we want to, you know, honor as well. This woman has given her life to playing the organ in this congregation. But a lot of our congregations have such deep ownership by the people who have always done it that we're not training the next people to come in.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to join the women's circle because the women know how to do it and I don't.
I don't want you to say anything. Or
yeah. So there are just things like that that go on in our congregations, I think, that we have a lot of gifts around and it's a challenge to find them. But when you find that 16-year-old who can play the trumpet or who can play the piano, that's just my little plug from my last congregation. It drove me nuts. We have a brilliant musician in this kid. Why isn't he up leading us in worship all the time?
Or at least some of the time.
Or at least some of the time.
Yeah.
Instead of just the one Sunday a year when the kids get to lead worship. That's my... Don't get me started. What time have we got, Deanne?
Almost a quarter till.
Okay. Since I have to go, when Deanne has to go, anything, you know, now we've gotten off on a tangent, but that's okay.
But I think that's one of the things that's really important about worship at Holden, and you said this already, about introducing resources, not just so that the people in the room find it lively and inspiring, but also that Holden has a kind of function that's a casting seeds function. So when I talk to people about what are you taking home when you're leaving, however long you've been here, is it a hymn, is it a prayer? I know many years ago, one of the things many people brought home from congregation to congregations from Holden was that to have an open prayers of the people,
mm-hmm.
that they
mm-hmm.
encountered that here and they took it with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small, you know, comes and goes. But I do think that's a really important thing about worship here is that it's a, I'm blanking on the word, but it's a stimulus
mm-hmm.
for thinking about worship in other places. So to talk about worship in other places doesn't seem to me a tangent at all.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
Well, along with that, I was going to say another resource that I do hope some people take home, which is a little bit more challenging resource because it really gets at some kind of fundamental things, is in the bookstore we have the Bibles that we use here, which are the inclusive. They're done with the whole thing now, which has taken them a really long time.
And who is them?
It's Priests for Equality, and they're located in Maryland, and they have done the entire Bible now.
Yeah, that's cool, a Catholic.
They are, as far as I know, Catholic, but I'm not positive about, yeah, Catholic. And I have found, they're not always completely 100%, you know, you don't want to just blanket use the inclusive New Testament, but I have found that it's really helpful at getting a very new perspective on the interpreted English translations, some of which, as I said, some of which is more helpful than others, and you do want to have somebody who kind of knows their Greek around. But even if you don't know your Greek, kind of comparing this to an NRSV or something like that is a real interesting exercise and can lead to its own conversation. So this is a resource, and I have people who come, you know, who write evaluations and things and kind of blame me for changing the Bible. Well, I'm not just changing, it's a different translation. And let's recognize that unless I was speaking in the Greek, and even there sometimes we'd have some question marks, I haven't really changed it, it's just a different interpretation. Which I think is a good, it's a really excellent resource. So, yeah.
I have a question, and this might be a whole different session to have sometime, but I kind of your experience and Ben's and anybody else who's served in ministry that you know deals with these concerns. But I mean, you know, Emily, I asked you yesterday about how do How do you have worship that takes into consideration people who've been wounded by the church, mm-hmm. but yet also feeds the souls of people who've been in the church their whole lives? Mm-hmm. I didn't, when we talked about this yesterday, I didn't think of the gift that Holden is, you know, worshiping every day. So you have the chance to mm-hmm. you know, that, like you said, you know, if, well, that service didn't do it for me, but I hope it was good for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Do you or Ben or Jane or anybody, any other clergy in the room, have any additional thoughts about how to feed the souls of the people who've been hurt by the church without leaving the people who you know, are you know, have always been part of the church, or you know, are comfortable with the traditional worship, you know, hungry or alienated. And it doesn't always have to be in the same service always, but I just, it's like, I hate the idea of well, okay, let's have a service for people who like the confession and the creed, and let's have a service for people who don't like it. I don't want to foist words that are hurtful on anybody else, but yeah, like I was telling you yesterday, my soul longs for confession.
Maybe more contemporary wordings that relate more rather than just the traditional formulas.
Well, personally, I'm pretty comfortable with the traditional stuff, and it's just that I don't want my comfort in tradition to, you know, keep someone else out of the church.
One of the things I keep coming back to, because I think it's a hard time to think like that, but it also is promising. Mm-hmm. A phrase that Gordon Lathrop uses is strong center, open door. And to me, it was the name for this big grant that Holden just used. But to me, it's trusting that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for everyone. And another phrase is, draw a line to exclude anyone, and Jesus Christ is on the other mm-hmm. side of the line. Mm-hmm. So it's not about washing out Christianity, but about holding that strong center, which is then the ultimate open door. And so that proclaiming the word that's in Scripture in its greatest clarity, which at the very heart is the open welcome of Jesus Christ, and celebrating this meal to which everyone is radically welcome, and there is enough for everyone, limited amount, but there is enough for everyone, that gospel will touch everyone. To have faith in those things, not in me or my community, but that those things speak a welcome that welcomes all of us. That's where I always want to begin.
One of the things that I've really liked that Emily has done with the litany that is a confession and leads in and is part of the absolution is the welcome to the table, in terms of all are welcome, and naming with specificity a wide variety.
Yeah.
And also, then our responses may all become welcome. Because we can claim it all the time, but there are certain realities in our church and world that make that not everybody's experience. And so the promise is there, absolutely, but the may all become, the now and not yet, for me is a very helpful part of that.
And I'm always struck by the way in which liturgy and language of worship is poetic, and the different kinds of poetic strategies.
Right.
That sometimes the poetic strategy to tell you that there are all the trees is to name a zillion kinds of trees, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's to say trees, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think it's important in worship, as in other kinds of discourse, to employ a variety of poetic conventions, mm-hmm. and not always rely on the same ones.
Okay, thank you, and I have to go.
Yeah, okay, we got it.
Thank you very much.